Okay, here we go. Welcome back to the Slapshot Alley podcast. I'm back with Cliff Ronning. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. It's beautiful sunny weather in Vancouver, and we're watching playoff hockey. Right now we got the Florida Panthers and Tampa Bay Lightning. How do you like the
great game? All the games have been great. Braden Point just scored a beauty. Smallest guy in the playoffs right now, I think. And once again, getting it done.
Yeah, we're at the Slapshot Alley. In case you don't know what that is, we are a hockey instruction facility, a shooting instruction facility.
Yeah, well, so, you know, it's a great place, a fun place where the kids can really learn proper shooting techniques so they can, as they get older, use that when they do get in the NHL. They're going to have the best shot in the league. And you look over there, the power meter we got going on from the pros to midget hockey, bantam, peewee, atom, novice, timbits, young kids, looking at the different, who has the hardest shot. And it really pushes the kids to practice. And I think what I've seen is when the kids actually use proper technique, loading the stick up, toe down, you definitely see their overall miles per hour increase, and I think the kids really from there get a lot of confidence.
That is the number one thing that motivates kids, is them seeing a new record for them, for their own personal goal. So usually what I do is when they get in here, you know, they'll shoot about 30-40 miles per hour, and we'll set a goal for two or three sessions. We'll say, okay, we're gonna get to 35, or we're gonna get to 45, and this is how you're gonna do it. And when they get there, and usually it's not long, usually it's before we actually set the goal for,
yeah,
they are just, you know, ecstatic. And what a great way to motivate kids to
a lot of that video feedback, the kids really understand that age. I guess they're playing a lot of computer games. They can relate to seeing something on a screen. They see themselves shoot and then next to a pro, and then they try to emulate it. And I think that starts the whole mindset of a brilliant shot. And I've seen you teach the kids, and like you said, within 1, 2, 3 sessions, these kids are shooting way better, and they're doing it in an individual setting where the coach is right there, it'd be able to explain to them if they're doing it right. So
exactly.
Fun place, Slapshot Alley.
Yeah. This week, like Cliff said, we've got a brand new power meter. So what that is actually our radar gun. And what I've done is I've made a chart for every single age division. And now the kids actually get to put their name on the meter at where they are. So they kind of get to see where the other kids are, but I try to get them to focus on where they are at, and just to set small little short-term goals. And you know, obviously the ways to get there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about your shot.
Yeah.
And how it developed. Do you remember when you started getting a shot?
Well, for me, I really focused on, I didn't have the hardest shot, but I tried to, you know, it was all about muscle memory for me and changing the angle on the goalie, going one way and shooting back, much like Gretzky did. So I constantly practiced certain moves. So if I got to a certain point on the ice, it was automatic. 1, 2, 3 steps, and then I would shoot high glove. If I dropped my right shoulder, if I didn't drop my shoulder, I'm trying to go 5-hole or to the stick side low. So it was just something practicing helped me score a lot of goals, especially in minor hockey.
I've watched a lot of your shots on YouTube. A lot of them are slap shots. Has the shot changed since then? Do you think that your shot has changed since then?
I think, you know, when I look back at my pro game, there wasn't a lot of snapshots because we were using wood sticks. You couldn't bend the stick properly to make it work unless you were super strong in the wrist, and I wasn't. But I had a little half slap shot that really fooled goalies, and it really jumped off my stick, so I really focused on that little half slap shot.
We've had a couple kids today actually increase their power. So I'd like to send out a congratulations to Lucas Lucas went from a 63 to 66 today. And Dawson, who just kind of learned, he's in Bantam right now, and he just kind of learned how to do a slap shot in the last month or two. And he's gone up from a 55 to a 62. So
that's excellent.
I asked him, I'm like, how does it feel? Like, what do you feel that's different? And he says that he's really learning how to hit the ice, you know, yeah, like
load up the stick.
How to load up the stick. And well, so
it's a great way for the kids to have kind of competition. But they're competing against themselves, but they can also see, like you said, that other kids are doing a certain number and they want to get to there. And you got to have goals, and that's a great way for kids to want to come in and try to beat that next guy. And I think that's why Slapshot Alley is fun for the kids to come in, and for parents out there that are already bringing their kids in, they know what's going on here, but we would love you to pass it on if you've been happy with it. About your next player on your team maybe doesn't shoot that well, and this is the place for you to send them to try to get them to that next level.
Let's see. I also had a stick fitting this week.
Yep.
So what we have is we've got a wall full of blades, different curves, all the different flexes, and we had a customer come in looking to find out what the proper flex was for them. And one of the things that I noticed was that a lot of people don't know what the lie of the hockey stick is. Can you kind of explain that?
Yeah, the lie is crucial, especially for stick handling, receiving passes. Those are the two most important when you're stick handling. You know, in general, a lie five is for someone who skates kind of in a good crouch position. There'll be more blade on the ice. You know, like I would say someone like... I used a lie five. Paul Coffey used a lie five. So you can kind of have the image of what the skater looked like. And a lie six is more for a player like a Joe Sakic, who pulled the puck into his feet to shoot. And also he can receive passes more in his feet. And myself, I wanted to receive them more out in front of me and not in my feet. But then you start getting to like lie four. Then you got, you remember Wayne Gretzky? Not a bad hockey player. He used a lie four. You don't see that much anymore. But lie four, the puck is always way out in front of you. It's hard to do toe drags. You never really saw Wayne Gretzky do toe drags. It was usually he was pushing the puck around someone or pushing the puck out and then shooting away from his body. Yeah. So it just depends on the style of player. If a player skates more upright, well, most likely they're going to want a higher lie on their stick. And you can tell a lot of times... If you check, especially the parents, tape their stick from heel to toe and really look at the wear pattern. If you're seeing too much pattern happening on the toe, that means they want to be in a higher lie. If you're on the heel, it's telling you that you want to go to a lower lie. And if it's in the middle, you got it. It's perfect.
Yeah. And that lie is pretty much crucial for all skills, you know, how the puck is... staying flat on the ice,
yeah.
Receiving passes. If you're not getting a good lie, the puck can slip right underneath the blade on you. The puck will come off.
That's another thing for the parents out there to take a watch your son or daughter. If they're receiving passes and it's always going under the toe, that's telling you, right? It's telling you what? Pretty simple. If it's going under your toe, he's up like this, so he wants to be... in a bit more of a lower lie to bring down that toe so it catches the puck. And then it's the opposite. If it's going underneath the heel, that's telling you that son or daughter wants to be in a higher lie, a six lie. So those are just indications you can watch. Wear pattern and the different lies on are they receiving passes incorrectly. So those are little testers that we do here, but you can even keep an eye on your kid out there, and you'll start seeing it happen all the time.
Yeah, the best way to actually test your son or daughter's stick, if it's got a good lie or not, is to fire some passes at them, and don't give them good passes. Give them passes to the toe, give them passes in their feet, and see if they're having trouble one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cliff, you mentioned last week that you kind of played around with your curve. You kind of developed your own curve to do multiple different functions.
Yeah.
How can a kid these days kind of experiment and figure out what kind of curve is good for their type of game?
You see, when I played, we were using wood sticks, so you could actually heat them up and try different toe curves, more of an upshoot. So now it's really tough, but actually you can come here to Slapshot Alley. There's, I think, 20 different curves here, and most of the curves are on the market sold by your big distributors from CCM, Bowers, Warriors, and you're able to try it so you can actually see what it feels like, you know, from a Hosa curve to Joe Sackett curve to Crosby curve. I mean, who else is there? There's Stamkos curve he actually uses. So you can actually try different curves that are from the toe, straighter curves. So really, it's a good opportunity to try here. And you're not purchasing a stick. You're more or less trying to figure out what works. So when you do go to the store, are you getting the right stick there?
Yeah. This week we had a young girl come in and practice her shooting, and I'd been through all the techniques with her, and she's reverting back to bad habits, keeping her head down, looking at the puck, trying to feel comfortable, just seeing where the puck is on her blade and shooting with her head down. How important is it to practice with your head up?
Well, I mean, it's definitely an art. I mean, probably, like I always refer to Joe Sakic, he was probably the best at it. His head was up. When your head is up, you can see what's going on around you. Maybe the goalie fell down and the net's wide open. Or by you having your head up, the goalie's worried. And also the defenseman, he might be coming out and trying to check you when someone's wide open on your team. So any player in any sport that plays with their head up is highly intelligent. They're going to be more effective, and they're going to look like they have more confidence. To me, when a player puts their head down, that's pretty well telling me the confidence isn't there. You got to bring the head up, and it really exemplifies confidence, and it's so important. And as you get older, if you get caught with your head down when you're about to shoot, it's not a good feeling when you get hit by some guy or girl. And you're not paying attention. So it's very important to have your head up for a lot of reasons, for safety, but also for showing you have confidence, but being able to see the ice and also to be able to see what the goalie's doing. For all you know, the goalie fell down and the net's wide open. So
definitely there become you go. More of a triple threat style player. When I'm teaching kids and they're constantly looking at the puck, what I've noticed is that they don't have confidence stick handling. So that's step one. So if somebody wants to learn how to keep their head up, it begins with stick handling the puck and getting a feel for the puck first. Yep. So a monotonous drill that I would say to kids to do at home to get that confidence of being able to keep your head up is just going home and stick handling while watching the game on TV or something like that.
I know I used to watch NHL hockey games. I'd have my hockey stick, and I would use a golf ball because a golf ball would stay on your stick a little more, but you'd actually feel it more because it was hard hitting each side stick handling. You're able to toe drag it. You can slightly put your head down to figure it out, but then you got to get your head back up. So that's what I used to do. I used to use a golf ball and with a hockey stick and stick handle watching a game, and I think that's a good start for anyone out there.
All right, let's start talking about what's going on in the playoffs this year. So who do you like?
It's such good hockey right now. I mean, I watched all the games today and I watched the game yesterday, and every time I watch, I'm thinking, oh, geez, this team's going to win it all. And right now, it looks like four different teams could win. You know, tonight, the game between Tampa and Florida was spectacular. And it just looked like in the end, Tampa Bay, knowing how to win championships, found a way. And it was the biggest battle of all the games. The Pittsburgh game was another good game, but I thought at times Pittsburgh totally outplayed the Islanders. But overall, it you know, Crosby was probably played with the most heart of anyone I saw tonight. He was doing everything he could for that team to win. And it just happened to be that the trade for Palmieri, you know, didn't score much when they traded, when they got him. But he's really showing that Lou Lamoriello did a great trade, because he can play in the playoffs where the game's a lot more, a little bit dirtier, a little more rougher. They don't call the little hooks and the little slashes anymore. So you got to play through stuff. You got to be tougher. You got to be tougher mentally. And Palmieri is definitely that.
First star of that game today between the Islanders and the Penguins. But did you see the Jean-Gabriel Pageau goal?
Yeah. No. Like you say, what's the best thing about playoffs is there's new heroes coming up all the time in playoffs. You don't have to be the number one player in your team.
Pageau scores a lot of goals like this. I don't know if you've noticed, but he likes to shoot from bad angles and surprise goaltenders.
Surprise goalies, yep. And it comes off his stick. He's probably got a certain curve. The puck just sits right in there like a Nedved and just gets a little extra on it that the goalie doesn't expect. So good for him. And they squeaked the win out. And they look pretty good. I know I played for Barry Trotz, and he's a fabulous coach. He's a great person, and he's a guy that really can motivate you to do whatever you can to win, much like a Pat Quinn.
Give us some examples of the way coaches do that for players. What's something specific that you remember a coach, you know, digging down deep inside to get?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing a coach can do is when you make a really bad mistake in a game, all of a sudden you're back out there. He doesn't want you to dwell on it. And that means he believes in you. And those kind of coaches, Trotz and Pat Quinn, were those kind of guys that believed in you and would give you that chance to get out there and do something about it instead of sit on the bench for the whole three periods and you're not getting out again. That's not what he would build your confidence. But not only did he, it's a great smart move as a coach, because now you've sent the message to your whole bench, hey, if you make a mistake trying, I'm going to put you back out there, right? So to me, I think it's a better play than just sitting someone and then everyone else starts tensing up, because now they're worried that, oh, if I make a mistake, I'm not going to get out again for another three periods. So good on those guys that are the positive coaches.
It just brought me back to minor hockey when I was playing for my coach, Leon Perry. And I was in a slump, and our team got a penalty shot, and he threw me out there. And I was like, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm in the worst slump of my life, and he's throwing me in there. And I went down there. I had very little confidence. Yeah. I was feeling the slump. But miraculously, I scored the goal.
Yep.
And it triggered something
in
me.
And all of a sudden, you're back. And that sends a message. That sends a message right down the whole bench. You know, I can see if someone's not trying and giving everything they have, sitting them and benching them or something, or guys taking stupid penalties. But when someone's trying their best and they can't quite get the puck out because it hits a skate or whatever, you get that guy back out there because it sends that message. That really goes out to a lot of the coaches out there, because it's way better message if you're sending that out than if you're sitting the kid. Because then you're going to have about 10 other guys starting to worry about their next shift, and it doesn't work.
Cliff, you'd be a great coach. When are you going to get back into coaching?
I'd love to coach. I think that's something I really enjoyed it. I coached a lot of great kids. I coached the Vancouver Selects 97 group, and we went on and won the Manitoba Western Bantam Championships at that time. And I mean, it was fabulous. I had players like Chalowski. We had kids like Craighead. We had Ty Ronning. We had Bradley on our team. We had Wesley. We had, you know what? 15 of the 16 kids went on to go play in the Western Hockey League. And our goalie was named Sartow from the States, and they all got drafted, and it was a fabulous team, and it was a team that passed the puck, a team that in the practices, they played hard. And we had also Kawaguchi. So, I mean, we had just a fabulous team to watch. I remember parents would come from other teams and want to watch this team play. They moved the puck. We had also Stukel. We had, like, all these guys are still playing. You know, and it was just phenomenal to be a part of that driven hockey player and teach them. So it was a good part of 4 years that he did that, and I loved it.
I got a question for you. Specifically to that team, do you remember the camaraderie of that team, like, off the ice?
Yeah, they were close. That team was close, but also they were very competitive because they knew they were, you know, probably in the top 30 kids in the lower mainland. So there was inner competition, but there was never really jealousy, which was good. But they all wanted to prove themselves, and they played intense, absolutely. And I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that because I felt these kids were going to go somewhere. Because they understood the game, how to forecheck, how to play defense, how to move the puck, how to be a good team player, how to score when the game's on the line. And I think that's a lot of them really learned. They stepped up in different games and tournaments. It was never the same guy scoring the big goal. It was always the next guy. And that was the beauty of that team.
Yeah, the reason why I brought that up was because of the Tyler Toffoli article in the Players Tribune this week. He explained, you know, how he really fit in with the Vancouver Canucks, and he wanted to play out the rest of his career with the Canucks. So, you know, obviously he's traded to Montreal now, and, you know, we've been talking about him for the last couple of shows and how we miss him.
Yeah.
But you've got to feel some type of...
Yeah.
You must relate to him.
No, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because it's true. That team was together for 4 years. Yes, they were competitive against each other, but that made them better. But when they got in the big games, they looked out for each other for sure. When we were in final games, that team was tight. You could tell they were all for the same reason. When I look back on my 94 team, that was a special year. Pat was making a team for the past 3 years. We got closer as friends, And even to this day, we're still great friends. So when you go through stuff like that and you're successful and then you're not successful and then you're successful, I think overall that brings people together. And Pat Quinn, it always comes back to your leader. And the leader can be the player, the captain on the team, but the leader really comes from up top. You know, like Pat Quinn, when we were with the Canucks, was really our leader. And we followed him. But you look at other teams that have a good leader. That's, you know, you look at Florida, they've turned their team around, and Quenneville knows how to win, and he's a good leader. And that's something I would really like to see, you know, overall for any team have that, because that's what you need. You need good leadership, and it just kind of transcends, and the players become really close and caring about each other. Like you said, Toffoli really liked it here and wanted to finish his career. So we didn't know that as fans, but I like everybody, we were kind of like, I don't know what the word is, confused on, you know, Vancouver's always wanted that Cam Neely, and they got rid of Cam Neely. But they've always wanted that right-handed guy that can play in traffic and still stick handle and play the dirty game, get in front of the net, score some goals.
Todd Bertuzzi comes to mind.
Todd Bertuzzi, yeah. Like just with a little gritty, a little bit nasty, can play when the game's, you know, when a guy's jumping on your back and you can still skate. You know, that's kind of, yeah, you need that, especially in the playoffs. So you watch the playoffs this year. The referees are back to what looked like almost when I played. You're allowed to slash, cross-check. You just can't hit someone head-first into the boards. And if it's a scoring chance, they might call it, but they're letting the team play. So it eliminates a lot of teams if certain teams were going to be in the playoffs if they let the games played out the way they are now. Some teams could not compete in this.
Okay, so we're going to wrap things up with a question from one of my buddies from Port Moody, Devin. He's asking, what was the toughest thing to commit to in order to play in the NHL?
Okay, well, I would say the hardest thing was, 15 years old, 15, 16 years old. And there's kids out there that age. You know, all your buddies are getting in a car and they might go to the beach and there might be a beer or two there. But I wouldn't go because I was getting ready to go to 8 rinks or 4 rinks back then because I wanted to go and skate. I'd rather go play hockey. So while all my friends were out, I guess, having a good time, I was going after what I wanted and I was so dedicated to it. And I think I was probably one of the most dedicated guys in hockey. I would challenge anyone. And a lot of the guys know me that when I played hockey, especially, 15, 16, all the way to 28 years old, the dedication was there. As you get a bit older, things change a little bit, but especially trying to make it, you got to be 100% dedicated and you're all in at all costs.
When did you truly believe that you were going to make the NHL?
Well, I mean, when I played in the Air Canada Cup, I thought, I think I can do this. We played Patrick Waugh
how old were you?
I was 15 going on 16. We won the Air Canada Cup championships. I seemed to outplay and got MVP of the tournament. And I think it was Red Story on TV. It was a big thing when you're that young. He says, hey, this running kid, I don't care what they say if he's too small, this kid, I think he's going to be able to do it. And it was kind of like, oh, wow, this guy, he used to do all the Leafs games and played in the NHL. And it was just like, gave me a little bit of confidence. But in the big picture, I just love playing the game of hockey. So it wasn't, if I didn't make the NHL, it was a bust or anything. I just love playing the game of hockey. I mean, I played 3 years in the NHL and got offered another contract with St. Louis, but I decided I wanted to go and play in Italy because I wanted to get more ice time and develop my game. And instead of play, just power play, 5-6 shifts a game, for the same money, I could go to Europe. And it wasn't about just making the NHL. It was about also satisfying playing. That feeling when you get to play and you're out on the ice, you get in that top three-line rotation, the game's the best. There's no doubt about it. And I spent a lot of time playing in that fourth-line rotation trying to get into the third-line rotation. And that's the challenge. And you have to stick with it. You got to just keep working, keep your head up, stay positive. And that's what I did. And my opportunity came when I came to Vancouver.
Thank you, Cliff. That's what we're about here at the Slapshot Alley. We are all about not just telling kids to make it to the NHL, but showing them how to enjoy the game, how to have fun, and all the beautiful experiences that you can get from the game of hockey. And, it can lead to so many different life lessons, whether... Well,
I've got a great story that kind of goes with that. I mean, my brother, my brother played hockey till he was 15 and he told my dad he doesn't want to play hockey no more. And my dad was kind of devastated. My brother was a very talented athlete. And he goes, hey dad, I want to play music. I want to be a musician, right out of the blue. And my dad at first was kind of like, oh man, I think you're pretty good at this. And then my dad said, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I have to do to help my kid. And guess what? My brother not only has been playing music for the past 40 years, my brother is the bass player for Bad Company, Paul Rogers, playing in front of 40,000 people. He played it in Nashville when he stayed with me in Nashville when they did an album, but... he played a concert in Nashville with like 18,000 people. And, here you go to the parents. I mean, the destiny of your child, but what hockey taught him possibly helped him too along the way. And that's the beauty of hockey, is it teaches you life lessons. It never goes good all the time, much like a golf game. So you have to be mentally tough, but also you got to find ways around things. And look at my brother. He ends up playing with one of the biggest legends in rock legend, in Paul Rogers. And he tells me every time he gets on stage, he has to like shake his head because he's going, wow, I'm playing like one of the best singers for rock ever. And he's lived his dream. And he was never held back from my parents at all. So it was really cool. And it even gets better because now once in a while, my brother plays some beer league hockey. And he's gone to Spain, over to Spain to play beer league hockey with a group. He's gone over to Finland and different places. And he just loves the camaraderie and just hanging out with the guys, having a beer after the game. And at one time, I think they were planning to go to Australia. So you just never know where this beautiful game of hockey can take you in your path.
Yeah, it's one of the beautiful things about hockey is that there is a great culture of adult hockey until you're in your retirement days.
Yeah, once you're a hockey player, you're always a hockey player, I think. It's always in you.
But there's always an organized game anywhere. You can travel.
Absolutely.
Almost every country, well, most countries.
Yeah.
Most hockey countries anyways. There's always a game that you can kind of fit in with.
That's the best part about it. And the best part's in the dressing room, you know. Once we get this COVID thing all figured out, which hopefully it's happening, that's the best part of the game, is sitting in the dressing room after the game and guys making fun of each other and really becoming good friends. And that's what hockey's taught me.
Awesome. Thank you, Cliff. And thank you for watching. We are back every week to talk about how to improve your game, what's going on at the Slapshot Alley, and a little bit about Cliff, the NHL, and anything else that we are finding out to be interesting in the world of hockey. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.